Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's Monday, June 11th, 2018. On today's show, we'll learn about the 4-H AK Experience Camp for kids. We'll talk Arlo Guthrie, folk icon extraordinaire with Juno Jazz and Classics. Learn how to join a walk through the tidal zone with the Juno Audubon Society. And we'll hear about plans for the undeveloped lot next to the downtown library. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 52 degrees and overcast here in the capital city.
This is national native news. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs has voted in favor of Tara Sweeney, President Trump's nominee for a key position on Indian Affairs at the Interior Department. Matt Laszlo has more from Washington.
Sweeney comes to D.C. from her native village of Barrow, Alaska, where she's well known for her role in native-run businesses. Her home state senator, Republican Lisa Murkowski, says Sweeney would be a great fit to be an Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs at the Department of the Interior.
This is a significant position, and it's hard. It is difficult, and I believe that if anybody is up to this hard and this difficult task, it is Tara Sweeney.
Sweeney would be the first Alaskan native and second woman to hold the role.
There's virtually no opposition from Indian country, and I think that that is important for us to clearly listen to.
But Sweeney has been subject to questions from the committee about potential conflicts of interest. Her former employer, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, is one of the largest landowners in Alaska and plays a big role in development and energy projects in the state. Washington State Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell wants to know that Sweeney won't use her office in Washington to influence policy back home.
I'd like her to just answer yes or no in writing whether she will seek a waiver to participate in matters involving the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation as a specific party that affects her financial interests, and whether she agrees any recusal should last for the length of her term as Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs, if confirmed.
In the past, nominations from the committee for the position haven't required formal votes on the floor. But with a packed schedule and political squabbling hanging over the Senate schedule, Sweeney's nomination faces an uncertain road ahead. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The Wisconsin Army National Guard recently celebrated the first woman, as well as the first Native American, to serve as Deputy Adjutant General. Ken Krall has more.
Major General Mark Anderson relinquished the post to Brigadier General Joni Matthews, who most recently served as the Assistant Adjutant General for Readiness and Training. Matthews was born in Lac des Flambeaux and is a member of the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. The 56-year-old Matthews has a lengthy history of setting firsts in the Wisconsin Army National Guard, from commanding the 1st Battalion, 147th Aviation, to commanding the 64th Troop Command, to serving as the Wisconsin Army National Guard's Chief of Staff, and then as Assistant Adjutant General for Readiness and Training. Matthews says she's proud of her history.
To me, I don't really look at myself like that. I look at myself as, you know, I'm the one best chosen for the position, whether I'm male, female, black, white, red, who knows what. But I am extremely proud of my background. I'm extremely proud of my traditions growing up on the reservation.
General Matthews will lead the 7,000 Wisconsin National Guard troops at the 69 armories across the state. For National Native News in northern Wisconsin, I'm Ken Krall.
On Friday, Akwesasne Mohawk co-talker Louis Levi Oakes was presented the New York State Liberty Medal. The medal is one of the highest civilian honors issued by New York State. It's bestowed upon those praised for heroic or humanitarian acts. Oakes was honored as a co-talker for his service in World War II. The award follows his May induction into the New York State Senate Veterans Hall of Fame. He's also a recipient of the Congressional Silver Medal. The Ponca Tribe of Nebraska held a groundbreaking ceremony Friday for the construction of a gaming facility in Carter Lake, Iowa. The tribe has long sought to build a casino for jobs and to boost the economy. The tribe was backed by the National Indian Gaming Commission in 2017, but the project faces opposition by Nebraska and Iowa. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation.
Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Freedom Lodge, presenting Body and Earth Conference, featuring leaders including Dr. Ruby Gibson in a contemplative historic journey to protect our lives and land. September 12th through the 15th, Mystic Lake Casino. Earliest bird deadline is June 15th at bodyandearth.org. Support by AARP. What we do might surprise you. Like sponsoring American Indian Days in Browning, Montana, July 12th through the 18th. Information at aarp.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, June 11th. Scott Burton, your host, and I'm going to check in with the newsroom. Now there's a new story about the Juneau waterfront developer pitches city land swap. I have Jacob Resnick here in the studio. He's a reporter with KTOL Public Media. Thanks for coming in to the studio, Jacob.
My pleasure, Scott.
Nice to have you here. So when did this come about?
Well, the Docks and Harbors Board has been looking at a redevelopment plan since late last year to try to figure out ways best used to use that land that's been pretty densely used between Marine Park and all over to the Taku Dock.
And just to get a sense of place here, I think of the downtown public library,
right.
And then next to it, there's been sort of this, I think of it as food cart culture in that,
yeah,
in that lot.
Exactly.
For years.
That's, yeah, and so that in that area that stretches from like Taku Smokeries to Marine Park, the only open space is a gravel lot there that has organically kind of sprung up the last few years with, you know, all kinds of local businesses selling coffee and food, and I think there's some gift shops and things like that.
And who owns that now?
So that lot has long been owned by the Morris family, who up until last year were the owners of the Juneau Empire.
Interesting.
They are based in Augusta, Georgia, have been since they first came to Juneau, buying up the paper and various properties around the community in the 60s. They've gotten completely out of the newspapers business. They offloaded 13 papers, including the Empire, last year, and they've pivoted, and now they're trying to go into become a real estate company. And so they were in town last week meeting with city officials and Docks and Harbors Board, and they have an idea because they own that open gravel lot where all the food trucks are, which has been identified by Docks and Harbors, who's doing this plan, is really that's like the last piece of the puzzle that could really be redeveloped in their eyes. And so they have an idea. They want to build about 12,000 square feet of retail and restaurant eatery space. It hasn't been clearly defined. But I did meet with the director of real estate, Alan Grinolds, on Friday, and this is kind of how he described it to me.
It's going to be a little bit different from what exists in the downtown core right now. What we want to do is create great view planes in between South Franklin Street and the existing Seawalk so that as you approach the development, you're drawn into the development as opposed to walking along South Franklin Street. Right now, you've got very large two-story buildings that are very close to the sidewalk. So what we want to do is almost create a village concept where you can walk into the development, enjoy it. You have 360-degree views around you. And, you know, as you come through, you go, gee, what's around the corner?
So as you heard there, they're describing much more of a brick-and-mortar, purposely built retail entertainment complex. The sketches that have come out, and they're just sketches that Docks and Harbors has, and I believe it's on our website, show three different units. One is about 6,600 square feet. One's 2,400 square feet. One's, if I can even read this, 3,300 square feet. And they would be, you know, I think people have seen around the country this kind of, they call it the village concept, where you try to make it, you know, as architecturally similar around you, but it's basically purpose-built. And one of the big questions that I put to Grinolds, and I also heard voiced at the Chamber of Commerce, you know, would this be seasonal as it is now, or would they try to find anchor tenants who would be open year-round? That's a big challenge for South Franklin Street. What Mr. Grinolds told me is, of course, they want to prefer to have a tenant paying year-round, but they would leave that up to market forces.
Okay, so I think we have a vision of that. Where does the land swap come in?
Right. So the parcels that the Morris family own aren't completely contiguous. There's an easement that cuts down the middle that's owned by the city. the Morris family does own these tidelands and uplands, which are mostly just covered with water now, that the city's and Docks and Harbors Board sees potential for a new staging area for shuttle buses and tour buses. It's kind of hard to visualize right now because it's just water.
Right.
But the plan that's been, at least the concept, would be swapping land, basically just moving lot lines around, where the Morris family would get one contiguous parcel, it would be a little over an acre, to do this development, and the city would expand its decking, which is that wood from the seawalk, down towards the water, and it would be a covered pedestrian area, and then so people getting off the cruise ships could get into tour buses and shuttle buses and go whale watching.
So when I think of a staging area, I think of the staging area at Marine Park.
Right,
where buses come in, people load and go out and go whale watching. This would be a similar staging area as a part, I think, of that as sort of the east side of this lot past the library.
From what I understand, that's right. And this is a big issue because tour operators will tell you that with the amount of cruise ship passengers that are coming into the community, the status quo now, there just isn't enough room for everybody downtown right now.
You were talking to Rory Watt as well about numbers. What do those look like?
Right. City Manager Rory Watt is very concerned about this. I mean, because right now, unprecedented, over 1 million passengers last year. I think we're about up to over 1.1 this year. And there's projected to be 1.3 million next year. So that's another 250,000 people being dropped into the Juneau community during the day, which is the high peak times. And so there's a lot of concern, like, where do you put all these people?
I hear you. Controversy. Is there any controversy? Are there going to be public meetings?
There will be public meetings. As far as controversy, well, as a beat reporter, I hope so. So far, I have to say that the developers, from what I can see, have been pretty transparent. I mean, they came and met with city leaders and Docks and Harbors Board, open door, public meeting. They announced that they were coming. They've shared their plans. I think some of this is because they have what they describe, I think, fairly as a pretty aggressive timeline to build all this. They want this in place by 2020. There are no permits pulled, no applications that have gone to the community development department, anything like that. But I would think we will be seeing that pretty quickly. The Docks and Harbors Board will be meeting later this month. I think June 28th is their meeting, which they'll probably make a formal recommendation to the assembly. Any land swap, of course, because this is, the people own this land, would have to be approved by the assembly, and there'd be public hearings. Just the back of the envelope's calculations that I've seen, the land swap would be in the developer's favor in so much that the city would be buying a lot more land that would be giving up. So the fair market value is the law. I think it was the number I saw was around $2.1 million that the city would have to pay to the developers for this to go through. And so that will be something that the public will want to talk about.
So the question is it in the taxpayers' best interest to put in the staging area in a sense?
Right. Also, I talked to the port director and the port engineer, Docks and Harbors, last week. I think this vacant parcel, or I don't want to call it vacant parcel because the food trucks are there during the cruise ship season, the port engineer Gary Gillette told me that the city actually had looked at buying that parcel, I think back in 2012, and the assembly opted not to because they didn't want to take it off the tax rolls. So there will be an argument from the developer side and people who see this, that this could be a net benefit to the city on the ledger because they'll be adding more activity, which would be subject to sales tax, property tax, what have you.
So last time I looked, this story was on our homepage at ktoo.org, and there's maps that you listeners can go to see what we've been talking about. Jacob Resnick, I appreciate you coming into the studio and letting us know about this. If people have ideas, information, perspectives, can they share those with you?
I hope they will. My direct line is 463-6440 at Jacob, J-A-C-O-B, at ktoo.org. Any news tips or any questions, I'll do my best, and I will be following this story as it develops.
Jacob, thank you so much for coming in the studio. Anything else you'd like to add?
Not at this time. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Jacob.
Support for KTOO is provided by Davies Berry Insurance, serving southeastern Alaska since 1917 with personal and commercial insurance, including homeowners, life, and health policies. 789-5900.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, June 11th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 16 minutes past the top of the hour. And with me in the studio is Darren Snyder. He is an agent with a cooperative extension service, and we're going to be talking about the 4-H AK Experience Camp that happens up in Haines here in the mid to end of July. Darren, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Scott.
All right, so the 4-H AK Experience Camp, we're going to be talking about that, but it's organized and run by the Cooperative Extension Service, is that right?
Yeah, yep.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so 4-H is the youth program for the Cooperative Extension Service. Nationally, it's the largest youth program, youth serving program in the United States. And we do our best here in Juneau to serve all of Southeast Alaska, all of Southeast Alaskan youth with different programs. And this camp, the AKA Experience Camp, is a flagship of our program where we offer middle schoolers and high schoolers an immersive residential camp experience. And it's a full week, Monday and July 23rd and through Saturday, July 28th. And this is our first year to be offering it up in Haines. We've offered it for about 7 or so years over the last few years here in the Juneau area. And so this is our opportunity to actually have it there and hold it there in Haines at the beautiful Rainbow Glacier Camp space there.
Got it. And when I think 4-H, I think farms.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are the kids, what are they going to be doing?
Well, that farming is really the roots of the 4-H program. But here in Alaska, we do it our way. And so what was found is that just that the way that 4-H is done is just a great youth serving kind of method, as if we call it that. The 4-H's, the head, heart, hands, and health, correspond to having the kids kind of have a sense of belonging within a healthy group, to learn mastery of skills, to learn independence as a young adult, and to have generosity and give back to their community. So those kind of four main tenets of youth development work in all areas. So with our camp here and with a lot of our programming, we focus on Alaskan skills. And so this AK Experience Camp is a lot based on like harvests, like fish harvests, and like how do we process fish, catching fish, deer processing animals. How do you some basic hunting skills. We partner. One of our primary partners is the Fish Department of Fish and Game. And so over the years, and this one included, we have experts coming in to help with some like tracking and again, kind of the processing of meat, and then we do a lot of wildcrafting, going out and harvesting, and survival skills and fire building, cooking on fires, and just fun time for the kids to have, you know, kind of this Alaskan experience.
That sounds like fun, and it's aimed at middle and high schoolers, you said?
Yeah, yeah. Any kid going into middle school and on up is eligible. We have the older youth, since that is quite a age spread right there. We have the older youth, kind of the upper teens, to help work as leaders within the camp, and many of them are returners, and so they kind of know the ropes. And although this year is going to be a learning curve for all of us, being in a whole new community.
Sure. And you say there's 30 to 40 spots in
yeah.
this camp?
Yep.
Got it. Let's see, when should people start signing up? Probably right now, huh?
Probably right now. In fact, the honest truth is we've had some challenges with our registration system, and it's finally up and running. We're a little bit late in the game right now, seeing as many people are already off on the summer vacation. And so we're hoping that you folks out there who are listening, think of any youth who would like to do this kind of activity and spread the word, please. You can get on our website, Southeast Alaska Cooperative Extension or Southeast Alaska 4-H. You can just Google those. You can get onto our website. You can get onto our Facebook. You can call our office. I can give you a phone number. It's 523-3280. You can talk to Susie or myself. about the camp and how to register. And it's just going to be, it's a great time.
Listeners, get out your pens. We'll give you that contact again here in just a second. Darren, what are a few of sort of the perennial favorite activities with this camp? Because you've been doing it since 2009, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, the kids love to just make fires and hang out and cook on the fires. And, you know, we have scheduled things where the kids will sign up ahead of time for different activities. But a lot of kids like to build survival shelters. We provide an opportunity for them to sleep out in their survival shelters. That's a pretty special thing, kind of rain or shine. And I think just running around doing camp activities, you know, and it is a both genders, you know, so boys and girls are running around, and it's just a healthy way for them to interact and and just enjoy themselves.
And how many of your coworkers work with you on this?
I have a couple primaries. One is Kay Shoemaker from she's kind of a statewide science support staff, and as well we have kind of specialist instruction through Sarah Lewis, who does our food preservation through our office here in Juneau, we have a total of 9 and kind of growing staff members who are going to be with us throughout the week. So we're very well staffed. We have volunteer staff, fortunately, to have that. And we're really, you know, we're really just trying to beat the drum now pretty loudly that it's time to register. And for those of you who were kind of waiting because our registration wasn't open, the floodgates are now open. So please do contact your friends and family and let people know that AK Experience Camp is open for business, and we're going to be doing it, having a good time up in Haines this year.
Okay, we've been speaking with Darren Snyder. He's an agent for the Cooperative Extension Service. He'll be one of the organizers and leaders of the 4-H AK Experience Camp for middle and high school young men and women. It takes place in Haines from July 23rd to July 27th. Darren, what's the cost for this?
It's $400, including the transportation to and from Haines, and really the base cost of the camp is $300. And so, if a youth happens to be in Haines already, or has other means of getting there and able to coordinate with us, then it would be $300. And both of those registration options are online. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention one other thing that's kind of a special thing this year for us. Two things. I intentionally have this week to be of camp, the 23rd, as the beginning of it, because the Haines Fair is the second part of that week and through the weekend. So if families want to come up that weekend and meet their youth who is just finishing camp, then they can come and spend Saturday and Sunday together with their kids up in up at the Haines Fair. So that's a cool thing. The kids are also going to be having the opportunity to prepare baked goods, Alaskan baked goods, to enter into the fair by Wednesday of that week. So that's something else they're doing at camp. And then the kids will be otherwise ferrying up and back from Juneau with the camp leaders.
All right, Darren.
A lot of fun.
Can you give us the contact phone number and website again, please?
Sure. It's 523-3280 is the phone, and if you just get Google Juneau 4-H program, then that will get you there.
All right, the 4-H AKA Experience Camp, July 23rd through the 27th in Haines. Darren Snyder, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
Thanks so much, Scott. Have a great summer, everybody. We'll see you at camp.
Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner? He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner.
All the counselors hate the waiters, and the lake has alligators, and the head coach wants no sissies, so he reads to us from something called Ulysses. No, I don't want this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy? They're about to organize a searching party. Take me home, oh Marafada, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home, I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay. I've been here one whole day. Dearest Vada, darling Mada, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball. Gee, that's better. Mata Fata, kindly disregard this letter.
Jazz and Classics presents legendary singer and songwriter Arlo Guthrie and family in Juneau, June 29th. Famous for Alice's Restaurant, Arlo's back with Sarah Lee and Abe Guthrie in his regeneration tour with songs of insight and wit at Centennial Hall, 7:30. Tickets at Hearthside, The Jack, and jazzandclassics.org. Bring a new generation to the regeneration tour when Arlo Guthrie comes to Juneau, June 29th.
Good morning, America.
And now in the studio with me to talk about Arlo Guthrie coming to Juneau's Reggie Schapp. She is the ED over at Juneau Jazz and Classics, fresh off another festival. Juneau Jazz and Classics seasons, how's it going, Reggie?
Really good, really good. It's a great festival, and we're going to wrap up the year with Arlo and his family. What can be better?
Where did this idea come from?
Well, actually, Anchorage was trying to get Arlo to come up for 4th of July, but he needed a tour. He doesn't just do single runouts anymore. So Juneau and Fairbanks hopped on his tour, so he's stopping here first on his way to Anchorage, then off to Fairbanks.
All right. And this is Arlo Guthrie and the next generation,
and the
right?
Next
What's
generation.
That mean?
He's bringing his son Abe and his daughter Sarah Lee, and the whole family is involved in this somehow. Annie Guthrie is their tour manager. They're all involved with this show. This was Woody's dream, that it be a family business, and Arlo has definitely turned it into that family dream. So Abe will be up here, Sarah Lee will be up here, and a grandson, Terrence, is up here. He plays the drum.
All right, so this is Friday, June 29th.
Friday, June 29th.
Oh, so 7:30. A couple more weeks.
Yeah, just a few more weeks, and ticket sales are going very well. We started advertising out in Haines and Skagway this weekend, and we sold a lot of tickets and people coming down. So if Juneau wants to represent, it's time to get your tickets. And we have a special deal for you, too. We want to introduce the new generation of Guthrie's to our younger generation. So for every regularly priced adult ticket or senior ticket that's purchased, you can purchase a ticket for someone 30 or under for $20.
Okay.
So half price off for him.
If somebody's never heard of Arlo Guthrie, who is he?
Arlo Guthrie is this wonderful, witty, I won't even say folk singer, but his father, Woody, was... That's what he was. He was talking about different things in our country that were wrong at the time during the civil rights and stuff. And Arlo has just carried it on. If you've ever heard the song Alice's Restaurant, it's played almost every Thanksgiving, I think. I don't think I've ever missed a Thanksgiving when it isn't played. And so he's just got this wonderful wit, fantastic songs. He plays old and new, so you'll be hearing some different things, especially from Sarah Lee. If you get on and listen to Sarah Lee sing, she has a beautiful voice herself. It's a wonderful show.
All right. Arlo Guthrie and family coming to Juneau here on Friday, June 29th at Centennial Hall. Show starts at 7:30. Special tickets for kids, it sounds like, or young
for
people?
Anyone under 30. But if they're coming and they're under 21, we will have bars at the show. They need to be accompanied by parent or guardian.
Got it. Where can people get tickets?
They can get tickets at the Jackbox office from us at Juneau Jazz and Classics, which is jazzandclassics.org. But if you want the special deal, you have to either call the Jack or Juneau Jazz and Classes. The Jack is 586 Arts. Juneau Jazz and Classics is 463-3378. If you go online, we couldn't put the deal online because there's no way to do it. So you got to call to get those tickets or stop by.
And that deal's for people under 30.
Under 30.
Those numbers again, call 586-ARTS to speak with someone at the Jack or 463-3378 to speak with someone at
Reggie,
Juneau Jazz.
Really, yeah.
To speak with you. Reggie, this sounds like fun. It's Arlo Guthrie, June 29th at Centennial Hall. Starts at 7:30. Anything else you'd like to add?
I know. I hope you all come. Be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, you're still here. That's good. Sounds like some of you heard this before. I know I have. That's because this song is called Alice's Restaurant. About Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of the restaurant. That was always just the name of the song. I guess that's why I still call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Well, it all started 50 years ago. 50 Thanksgivings ago. 50 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in the restaurant. She lived in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray, Fodge the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took a half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the town dump. We got there. There was a sign, a chain across the road saying, "Closed on Thanksgiving." And we had never heard of a dump being closed on Thanksgiving before. So with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. And we didn't find one till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did, drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obi. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it. And I said, yes, sir, Officer Obie.
Only Fools Run at Midnight is fast approaching.
Fun for Public Radio.
On June 23rd, join forces, get active with your friends and co-workers,
and register as a team for the biggest fun run of the year.
You and your teammates could dress up as fruit,
monsters,
animals,
or whatever you come up with.
Then be entered in the annual Only Fools Run at Midnight costume contest,
featuring great prizes.
Embrace the spirit.
And register your team today at ktoo.org/foolsrun.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, June 11th, about 25 minutes till the top of the hour. Don't worry, we'll get back to Alice's restaurant here in just a minute. In the meantime, Brenda Wright is flown into the studio, part of the Juno Audubon Society, and we're going to be talking about Saturday's Wild Low Tide Walk. It's this Saturday, 8 a.m. out the road. Welcome to the show, Brenda.
Thanks, Scott.
Nice to have you here. So I was telling you, I think of Audubon often as bird-related, but you're more than that.
Yes, we certainly are. This time of year, it's really, really nice to have all our migrants back, but, you know, almost everything is nesting, so there's not much song going on. We don't see a lot of birds. It's really fun to see the ducklings right now, lots of mallard ducklings around town. But because for quite a few years now we've been doing, we want to expand and let everybody know Audubon's about more than just birds. It's also about other parts of nature.
Okay. And so you do this low tide walk. How many years have you been doing this?
Yeah, we've been doing it about 8 years. We're very, very lucky to have Pat Harris, who is a retired marine biologist, be one of our main leaders. And she knows so much about the algae and the worms and the fish and the bugs and crustaceans and anything you can think of that lives under our feet that we don't get to see except on a really nice minus tide.
And I expect in one way or another they do support birds.
Yes.
Probably.
Oh, fine. Yes, especially in the winter. And all of our goals are totally dependent on the small clams and the baby worms and the snails and all that things that feed the birds all year round.
Okay, so this is this Saturday. Tell us how we can get on this walk.
All right, so this is out the road a ways. It's near 36 Mile on Glacier Highway, and it's the South Bridget Cove. Now, I don't know how many of you folks have been around Juneau for a really long time, but a while ago they made a movie that was filmed at this place. It's not the trailhead, and it's not the little parking lot that goes down to the North Bridget Cove. This is just a place where the stream comes out into a large beach, and there's some wonderful rocks to show off all our starfish and other animals.
Okay, so right around 36 Mile.
Just very close there. Hopefully there'll be a car there with a big Juno Audubon sign on the side, so you'll know you're at the right place.
Do people have to be members of the Juno Audubon Society?
Oh, no. This is all free and open to the public. We just appreciate no dogs, but children are more than welcome. And if you're really interested, bring a small spatula or a little tiny bucket or just a plastic container so that when we get these live things, we can all look at them carefully and put them back where they live.
Got it. So are you meeting at 8 a.m.?
Yes, we're meeting at 8 a.m. The low tide is at minus 4.5, and it's at 9:45 a.m. So this time we have a perfect tide on a Saturday and daylight. We're so happy.
All right. This sounds like fun. Saturday Wild Low Tide Walk out at 36 Mile with the Juno Audubon Society. What's next for you guys after this?
Yes. Well, hopefully we'll be able to, with any luck at all, Juno Audubon Society members will be able to go up the tram so we can look at alpine birds and flowers in July. And in August, we do mushrooms, and that's always very popular. And September, we round up with berries.
Okay. Back to those mallards for a minute. If somebody wants to go see baby mallard ducks, where should they go?
One of the places I've seen them just a couple days ago was at Kingfisher Pond. I know a lot of people aren't familiar with that, but it's right behind the city, Juneau City Police Office.
Okay. Sounds like fun. Well, thanks for coming on the show very much, Brenda.
Thanks so much, Scott.
All right.
If I don't get out there first.
June 30th may not mean much to you, but at KTOO, it's the last day of our fiscal year. As we look towards the end of June, we see that there's $40,000 left to raise in membership support. That's why your contribution today is so important. If you've never given to the station, or you feel you can give more this year, or it's time to renew, please give now as generously as you can at ktoo.org. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. When are the sounds of construction also the sounds of conservation? One example is when they come from the building of nest boxes for birds such as the red-headed woodpecker. But why build a nest box for woodpeckers? Don't they carve out their own homes? They do. Red-headed woodpeckers excavate cavities in large dead trees, called snags. Yet, over much of the bird's range, snags are frequently cut down as unsightly, or because they make good firewood. The red-headed woodpecker is a striking bird. Its scarlet head glows in sharp contrast with its flashy black and white wings. It's a head-turner, even for those who rarely notice birds. Native to the East and Midwest, its numbers have dropped by more than half since the 1960s, largely through loss of suitable nesting habitat. There are ways we can help the red-headed woodpecker. The key is to leave snags intact. The woodpeckers will prosper even in city parks and on golf courses as long as managers protect snags. Meanwhile, let's keep building those nest boxes. You can find plans on our website, birdnote.org.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's about 18 minutes till the top of the hour. We have a little extra time here on the show, so we might as well listen to the rest of Alice's Restaurant. I know it's not Thanksgiving. Arlo Guthrie will be here in Juno on Friday, June 29th, playing at Centennial Hall. Go to the Jack or JunoJazzAndClassics.org for more information.
Officer Obi. He said, kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it. And I said, yes, sir, Officer Obi. I cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage. It was after talking to Obi for about 45 minutes on the telephone that we finally arrived at the truth of the matter. And Obi said we had to go down, pick up the garbage, and we also had to go down and talk to him at the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one of two things that Obi could have done at the police officer station, and the first thing was he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest over the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. And, of course, the other possibility was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility we hadn't counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. I said, Obi, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on. He said, shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car. And we sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. Now, friends, I'm going to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this is happening. They got three stop signs, two police officers, and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it, and they was using up all kinds of cop equipment they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster tire tracks, footprints, dog smelling prints. And they took 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. They took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. It was after the ordeal we went back to the jail, and Obi said he was going to put us in the cell. He said, kid, I'm going to put you in a cell. Give me your wallet and your belt. And I said, Obi, I can understand you wanting my wallet, so I don't have any money to spend in the cell.
but what do you want my belt for? He said, kid, we don't want any hangings. And I said, Obi, did you think I was going to hang myself for littering? Obi said he was making sure, and friends, Obi was, because he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. Took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, have an escape and get away. Obi was making sure, all right. And it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? This is still the song about Alice, and she come by, and with a few nasty words to Obi on the side, she bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep, didn't get up until the next morning, when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obi come in with the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And he sat down. A man come in. He said, all rise. And we stood up. And Obi stood up with the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures. And the judge walked in, sat down with a C&I dog. He sat down. Obi looked at the C&I dog, and then at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures, and looked at the C&I dog. And Obi began to cry, because Obi come to the realization that this was a typical case of American blind justice. There was no way the judge was going to look at the 27, 8 by 10 colored glossy picture. Well, it didn't matter, because we was fined $25 each. We had to pick up the garbage in the snow. Of course, that's not what I come to talk about. Just thought I'd mention it. I thought I'd talk a little bit about the draft. And for those that can't remember, weren't there, back in those days, they used to have a thing called the Selective Service System, which meant that when you was a guy and you turned 18, you had to register with the Selective Service so that you could select some kind of service that might be of interest to you. If your choice was none of the above, they would help you by making a selection for you. And to do that, they had buildings all around America, where you, and then one down in New York on Whitehall Street, where you used to have to go in, get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I remember I had to go in there one morning a long time ago for my physical examination. So I got good and drunk the night before, because I wanted to feel my best when I went in that morning. I mean, I wanted to feel like, I wanted to look, I wanted to be like the all-American kid. When I went in that morning, I was hung down, I was brummed down, I was hung up, I was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking things. And I walked in, I sat down. They gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. I went in there. I said, shrink, I want to kill. I want to kill. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth, eat dead bird bodies. I mean, kill. And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill, kill. And he started jumping up and down with me. And we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill, 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 kill. Till my sergeant come over, bend the metal on me, sent me down the hall saying, you're our boy. I didn't feel real good about it. But I proceeded on down the hall, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. They was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they was leaving no parts untouched. But I proceeded through until I finally come to see the very last man. I walked up, I said, what do you want to see me about? He said, kid, we only have one more question. Have you ever been arrested? And I told him the story of Hamlet's restaurant. Mass agree with five-part harmony, full orchestration, all kinds of the phenomenon. He stopped me there, he said, kid, did you go to court? And I told him the story of the 27, 8, 5, 10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows. He stopped me again. He said, kid, I want you to go over, sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid. I went over there, Group W. Group W is where they used to put you if you might not have been moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime. There was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly looking people on the bench next to me. I mean, there was mother rapers, father stabbers, father rapers. There was father rapers sitting there on the bench next to me. I mean, these was mean, nasty, ugly, horrible crime kind of guys. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he sat down next to me and said, kid, what'd you get? I said, I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $25 and pick up the garbage. He said, kid, what was you arrested for? I said, littering. And they all moved away from me on the bench there, giving me the hairy eyeball and all kinds of stuff, you know, until I said, and creating a nuisance. And then they all come back and shook my hand. We had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, who's smoking cigarettes and all kinds of stuff, having a good time. Till the sergeant come over. He had some paper in his hand. He held it up. He went like this. He said, kid, these deep raids about 47 words, 37 sentences. One at a time, the crime details, the crime, you gotta say, pretend tune about the crime. The resting officer's name kind of thing gotta say. And he talked for 45 minutes. And nobody understood a word he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench. I wrote down the massacre like I was supposed to, and I put down my pencil, turned over the piece of paper. There on the other side of that piece of paper, in the middle of the other side, I mean away from everything else on the other side, underlined, capitalized, quotated, read the following words. Kid, have you rehabilitated yourself? I went over to the sergeant. I said, sergeant, you got about a call to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I mean, I'm sitting here on the bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on the Group W bench, cause you wanna know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, children, villages after being a litter bug. He said, kid, we don't like your kind. We're gonna send your fingerprints off to Washington. And friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in a little folder, is a study in black and white of my fingerprints. They're still there. They've been there 50 freaking years. And I'm not the only one. They've been adding to the collection recently. And so the only reason I'm singing you the song tonight is because you may know somebody in a similar collection. Even some of you could be in a collection like that. And if you ever find yourself in a collection like that, you don't know what to do. There may be only one thing. Well, actually, there may not be anything you can do, but there's something you can try, and it's to be wherever it is you're supposed to be, just wherever you are. Stop, take a moment, go something like this. You just say, you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. That's it. Just a couple of bars, Alice's restaurant, wherever you are. Imagine one person doing that. Probably not worth collecting, but imagine two of them. Maybe two of them trying to get married in Texas or Ohio or something. Or three of them out in Idaho or Utah. I mean, who knows? Or 50. Maybe 50,000 people. Maybe thousands of people all over the country, wherever they are, stop whatever they're doing, singing a few bars at Alice's restaurant. be worth collecting then. Not only that, when you get enough people singing along on the song, even the people collecting might join in. And when you get a song worth joining in on, no matter who you are, what side of the aisle you come from, or whatever you're thinking about, it becomes what we used to call a movement. Now, one of these days, somebody's going to write a song like that. It's not this one. But while we're waiting for that song to get wrote, we can practice on the one we got. It's not all that hard. Some of you know it. So we'll just wait for it to come around on the guitar. Give it a shot. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. No, that sucked. I mean, I know we're filming and everything, but you want to end war, you want to change the world, you want to do something, you want to be worth collecting, you got to learn to sing loud. So wait for it to come around again. I'm still not proud or tired. Here we go. You can get anything that's better at Alice's Restaurant, except in Alice. You can get anything you want.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. Ben Brown will be your host tomorrow, and we're going to get a summer reading list from the Juno Public Library. Looking forward to that. Steve Kosas will tell us about moon facts Tuesday night at the planetarium. Jordan Nigro will let us know about what's going on at the Zach Gordon Youth Center and opportunities for youths this summer. And Roy Anderson will be in from the Polaris House to tell us what they're up to. It's currently 52 degrees and overcast here in the capital city. The forecast for tonight calls for scattered showers and patchy fog and a 40% chance of precip. Tomorrow, Tuesday, isolated showers and patchy fog, then partly sunny. Going into Wednesday, cloudy skies with a high of 62. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.